I'm Phil C.
And I'm Lynn.
And together,
we're Roman Oz.
Real interviews.
With real people.
On location.
With a great mix of Aussie music.
As requested by the people we interview.
Follow us on Facebook.
Or check us out, allaussieradio.com.au.
Now syndicated too.
Backwater Country, 87.6 FM.
Tuesdays and Fridays.
At 9 PM. All interviews are live.
And on location.
And may vary in audio quality from segment to segment.
So what's on the show?
Well, we're going to start off in Whitecliffs.
Yes, we are.
So I believe this is probably the
most... This is a must-see.
It is a must-see. It is the most interesting, attractive, brilliantly put together...
Dugout house.
It's a dugout house. I wouldn't call it an attraction.
No.
Because these two people that put this together, they actually live there. This is their home.
And they let you come through.
They do indeed. Now
they do tours, I should say.
Well, they do tours. But actually a tour bus does the tours. They don't really do the tours. They just allow you to go through their fabulous home. So the home is called The Dugout, and it is the home of Lindsay and Cree.
Yes.
So what would you say about Cree?
Oh, she is an amazing woman. She is an interior designer, a decorator, and she has done the house beautifully with her decoration. And some of her artwork, well, I don't want to give too much away, but it is something to see. Let me put in, you know, one little word, roadkill is featured, but not as you would have imagined.
Roadkill is featured, yes, but not as you would imagine, correct. So if she does find some roadkill on the side of the road, she takes it home, throws it in the cook pot, and she doesn't feed it to the tourists.
And it is a separate fry pan that she uses.
And a boiling pot. But what she does basically is she bleaches the skeletal remains.
And makes artwork out of it.
And turns it into artwork. And she also finds things on the rubbish tip.
Yes.
Things on the side of the road.
Barbed wire is another one that is just amazing.
She just virtually finds all these artifacts, I guess you could call them, for one of junk, rubbish.
And creates art.
And creates art.
And it's amazing.
And it is the most amazing place. And Lindsay, wow, what a... He's 70 years of age.
Yes.
And he's an extremely fit guy. This is like the seventh home that they've built there in Whitecliffs.
Yeah, I think it was, yes.
So for all our people visiting Whitecliffs, the dugout is definitely a must-see. And straight after that, we are going to be in St. George.
Yes, which is in southeast Queensland.
Right. And we're going to be visiting the Unique Egg.
Yes, Stavros is his name, and he's an amazing amazing guy. He's Greek, and he moved out to Australia and built a life here, and he whittles away at emu eggs and does magnificent carvings.
Whittle away is probably the best way to term it, because he just doesn't sit there and hack into them, does he?
No, he doesn't.
He says an egg can take up to 50 hours.
To
make a carving. And he did say to me, you have to take it very slow and very carefully, because if you go too far, there's no reverse gear, quote unquote. But he's got the most incredible emu egg carvings, and he's got some of them that are lit up with lamps and lights.
Yeah.
And he's had some incredibly interesting people visit the shop as well.
Yes, he has.
Okay. So if you are interested in emu eggs and what you can do with an emu egg.
Or something to do in St. George.
Or something to do in St. George, because the store, the emu egg, it's situated next to Steve Jean's coffee shop in Victoria Street.
Oh, that's the main street.
That is the main street, and it's for over 60 years, Steve or Stavros Margaritis, that's his surname. He's been handcrafting the emu eggs in a variety of designs. Now, his inspiration in the craft comes from his early childhood years back in Greece, as you said, because he comes from Greece, where he remembers shepherds in the bush carving from wood. Now, as a kid, he broke a glass bottle, which was the very first thing that he used for his carving.
Oh, okay. Fascinating.
Fascinating stuff.
But he will tell you stories while you're there in the shop.
Oh, look, he's a character, isn't he?
He is, yes.
He's a character, and he's got some extremely interesting stories to tell, and it is definitely a must-see. It's only $5 to get in.
Yep, just a donation,
but
nothing is for sale.
No, not unless you offer him large amounts of money.
Yeah.
After that, we're going to be chatting with Jamie from the Nindengully Pub.
Yes, what a great pub that is.
Oh, I can't believe
Built back in 1864.
Yep.
Amazing. And it's a great place to camp too. You can free camp there.
Yeah, absolutely. You can free camp. There's some fantastic facilities too, you know. They've got water views, especially when it's raining.
Oh, yes. We were very lucky to get out of there the next day.
You're not wrong. But they've also got shower and toilets.
Yes, they
And it's
do.
All free. They just really like you to patronise the hotel.
Oh, and boy, did we.
Did we what? Now, we ordered a small meal, didn't we, Lynn?
We did. We ordered a steak sandwich.
Yes.
That and could be shared between three people.
Yeah, well, they say it's a two-person meal, but I've got to tell you, it had three eggs on it and half a kilo of bacon, and it was absolutely huge.
It was.
But, you know, the thing is, what attracted me to that particular pub was I wanted to have a crack at their at their road train burger.
Yes.
Now, the road train burger is 1.2 kilograms of meat.
Yeah, that's heart attack material.
It's heart attack material. It's meant to feed anybody from four to six people. But you know what? You got to fork out a healthy $80 if you want to give it a crack. But let's be honest. This is the burger that could realistically feed four people easily.
Yeah.
Easily. So it's actually quite economical.
Yep.
For $80, you'll get a staggering, let me tell you what's on it, a staggering 1.2 kilograms of meat patty, a 1 kilogram bun, one entire lettuce.
Wow. That's the price of a lettuce today.
It goes on. Three large beetroots, a whole tin of pineapple slices, six tomatoes, 400 grams of cheese, and to top it all off, 1 kilogram of potato wedges.
Wow. Yeah, no, that's definitely to share, not on your own.
Yeah, now apparently nobody has actually been able to eat this single-handed. Back in the day, they used to challenge people. If you could eat it single-handedly, they'd give you a 5 kilogram, not a five, a 5 liter keg of beer.
Oh, okay.
Okay, they don't do that anymore.
No.
Well, nobody's ever been able to do it, so they just give you. I did speak with Jamie, the chef there, and he said, look, we'll just give them a little souvenir pack if they're able to do it, you know, a stubby cooler and a few other bits and pieces. But nobody's ever been able to do it. So it is a fabulous pub to visit. It's very iconic. It's the oldest licensed hotel, and it's got some great facilities there. It's pet-friendly and free camping. So if you're in that area, anywhere near the Nindengully Pub, guys, you got to drop in.
Most certainly do.
Absolutely. I think, apart from all this fabulous information, we've also got a great selection of music
as requested by the people we interview.
So, Lynn, what do you think?
On with the show.
Hello, listeners. Phil C here.
And I'm Lynn.
And this is Roaming Oz. And we are in White Cliffs.
Yes.
And who are we chatting with, Lynn?
We're chatting with Lindsay and Cree, and they have a house that's been dug out.
Tell us all about this dug-out house of yours, Lindsay.
Well, White Cliffs is a very hot place.
Right.
And years ago, the miners, and they said that there was something like 3,000 people here at one stage,
right,
found that the extreme heat of 50 degrees, the best place, the coolest place, was underground.
Okay.
That sounds
so correct. Subsequently, they started living underground.
Okay.
And then us modern people have changed it from a cave into like a gallery.
Well, you wouldn't expect, we haven't seen down the house down under yet, the dugout, but to look at where we're sitting, you've got tiled floors, you've got glass windows everywhere, you've got this huge tree trunk with a big burl on it. This is a magnificent looking home from here, your huge book collection behind you. You wouldn't expect that, well, I can't imagine. What does downstairs look like? Is it going to look like this down in the dugout, or is it just going to be dusty and...
It's actually straight in. You don't walk downstairs.
You don't walk downstairs?
It's like walking into a cave.
Or walking down. Oh, my goodness.
And I guess it looks like this.
So that clump of dirt that we saw out there, the rocks and everything, you just dug straight into that. Right.
That
okay.
is the roof. And whose idea was it? Was it yours, Lindsay, to come up with this creation?
Yeah, this... Cree's an interior designer.
Right.
And so she's got plenty of good ideas. Mm-hmm. I'm just the little worker. But what we do here is we cut the side of the hill away.
Right.
And then we put this piece out the front. And the reason that we put this piece out the front is for rainwater.
Okay.
Right.
Because that the town water has chemicals in, which is required by law, which we don't like drinking chemicals. So when you build one of these underground houses, the first thing you do is put a roof out and collect the rainwater.
Okay.
Then when we walk into that house there, we're already 20 feet underground.
Wow. Okay.
And I think when you go through there, which will take you through, you will just be blown away.
Do you have a feeling of claustrophobia with it?
You will answer that.
Oh, right, okay.
You won't feel that at all.
You won't?
But when you're in there and you're so secure and the ground is so hard, it's harder than concrete.
Right.
The old timers, this area was an old mine, another 30 feet under our feet here. But they couldn't dig this level because it was too hard.
Right.
If you take a pick in there, rush up the wall, it will bounce off.
Oh.
That's how hard. It took me a year and a half.
Really?
Just to dig the rooms of this. And then 5 years ago, we started coming here and furnishing it.
Yep.
And so we've probably got another 2 or 3 years to finish the place.
Wow. Oh, okay.
But this is number six that we've done here.
Number six.
In Whitecliffs.
Mm.
So you've sold the other five?
Well, we've still got a couple of them. Yep. But the others have been sold. Yes.
Okay. Wow. Right. So how long have you been here, Lindsay?
I've been here 55 years.
Okay.
I'm 75 now, and Cree's the same. We're both 75 years of age.
Uh-huh.
But I came from Geelong, and Cree originally came from New Zealand.
Oh.
So what was the attraction in Whitecliffs at 20? Did you think, I'm coming out here and I'm going to strike it rich with opal? What brought you to Whitecliffs?
I came up here as a wool classer.
Okay.
I walked into Whitecliffs one red hot day. It was 50 degrees, and I went into the shop, and I was talking to a lady in there who had an underground art gallery.
Right.
And all her dentures were done in oval.
Oh.
Really?
So she was a wonderful character and invited me to come into the dugout.
Yeah.
Right. And I walked into that dugout, it was 20 degrees, cool, amazing. And I said, how do you get one of these places? She said, just go and put 4 steel pegs anywhere you like on the side of the hill where you can dig a house. Send $25 a year to the lands department and it's yours. So, not having much money, I borrowed a pick, a wheelbarrow and a shovel and then built the first house.
Wow.
And what was that, just one room or...?
It was actually quite a big place. It had something like 16 rooms.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
16?
For one person?
Yeah.
A B&B, underground.
It was never a B&B, but... You know, just a home.
And, 16 rooms, eh?
You can... And the first one that I built it as you drove into the hill, and then I put like a big centre pillar in front of me.
Yes.
And then made a big room, a big circular room around that pillar.
Yep.
And then off that circle was all the other rooms. So it was like a big wagon wheel.
Ah.
Okay.
Inside of the house, yeah.
So in winter, do you need heating here, or is it just...
Constant temperature.
Constant temperature.
It drops to about 18 degrees,
and
it stays up around the 20 degrees now in summer.
Right.
So 2 degrees, but when you're sleeping at night, unlike a house where the temperature drops and you've got to pull another blanket on, you won't have that trouble here underground.
Really? Okay. So you do tours here daily. The bus tour comes around, you have people. How do you feel about having people coming in, you know, every day? Do you feel like you've got to keep the house clean, wash the floors, do the dusting?
Well, we've virtually found ourselves with friends taking them through anyway.
Yep.
So we just made a time that if there was any other people in the town that we would take them through too. So because people were wanting to see what we're doing.
Yep.
And people come to Whitecliffs for the opal and they come to Whitecliffs to see an underground home because... Yep. There's only two places virtually in Australia where you can go underground.
Yes.
Here in Kittapega. So it's pretty unique.
Mm-hmm.
So, mind you, we did do an underground home in Kittapega, I think.
No, we did a church.
We did a church, didn't we? But nothing like this. I mean, this is this is magnificent. Oh my God. That's, yeah.
Yeah.
Pretty
so
impressive.
So, what's the population of white cliffs?
99. You could be the 100 or the 101.
We might have to talk to, we might have to talk to Lindsay about selling us one of his other homes. So, when you came here at 20, did you do mining or no?
Oh, yes. I used to come in every weekend.
Okay.
And but when you're digging your home.
Yes.
You find opal too.
Of course.
So, you know, like, you're sort of doing two things.
Two things at once.
There's a thing about opal that when you see it, you're the first person in the world to see that opal.
Yes.
And it can be so beautiful.
Uh-huh.
It's Australia's national gem.
Mm.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
It really does. It just gives you a great, okay, you know when you find opal that it's worth money.
Mm.
But that's not the thing. It's the hunt.
Mm.
And the excitement of actually finding, and you're the first person to see it.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
It's wonderful. You know.
So you don't feel like you want to just keep going and going and going?
Oh, yeah, you do.
Oh, you do.
You do.
So once you find that one piece, you feel like,
oh,
you know,
there's... Yeah, it's like probably fishing or whatever other people do in activities. It's something that gets you.
Yeah.
And then you're like the blokes down at the hotel and they put their hand in. Look at it. And it's very exciting.
Oh, okay. So you've obviously made enough out of it to do things and make jewellery.
No,
and
it's not the, you're not making much money out of it. I mean, to show this place here, how many lights do we turn on, crew?
About 50.
Oh, really?
No, come on, be serious. I think it's 82. And so by the time you pay your electricity bill and your time, you just do it for love, virtually.
82 lights.
So speaking of electricity, do you have any solar energy here?
Have solar, and we run the house on rainwater as well.
Okay.
We've got big tanks under the shed and stuff down both sides. So we just cook and do everything with rainwater.
So what is the average rainfall out here?
200 mil a year. Like Sydney get that in 5 minutes lately.
Oh, yes. Yeah, indeed.
8 inches. 8 inches in the old scale, 200 mil in the...
And that keeps you going?
Yeah, if you collect it...
As long as you've got a big area.
Yeah, when we get up top, when we take you through and we go up the staircase and go up top, you'll see the extent of the roof area that I've got here.
Oh, okay.
And that provides us with our rainwater.
Impressive.
Indeed. So, the town of Whitecliffs, how did it get its name?
I don't, to be honest. I have no idea, but I would say because of these three hills here and the shedding on the side of the hills of the white sandstone, as you're coming from the west towards Whitecliffs or coming in from the north, in the summer, you can see this white shimmer in the distance.
Yep.
So, it just looks like cliffs, possibly like the White Cliffs of Dover if you were on a boat or something.
Yep.
So I dare say that somebody said, oh, we're going down to the White Cliffs. And I think that would possibly be the reason.
Okay.
Interesting,
yes.
Okay.
And do you have any idea how old the town of White Cliffs is? Like, when was it first settled or established?
It's around 1884, somewhere just before the 1900s.
Okay. Mm.
So we're getting well over the whole 100 years now.
So do you know that when it first sort of became established and people realised there was opal here, were there a lot of people here? Because you've got a population now of 91. Do you have any idea, would there have been thousands of people here gouging for opal back then or no?
This is the first commercial opal field in the world.
Right.
And when these kangaroo shooters actually picked these stones up and sent them to Adelaide to a friend, and found out it was open.
Mm-hmm.
Within about 10 years, there was 3,000 people here.
Okay. Mm.
And so you can imagine that water, there's no water in this area.
Mm.
No.
So every bullet train, and they tell me that there was 5 camel or bullet trains between Wilcannia, the river, and Whitecliffs, which is 100 k's away, on that road every day. And half their load would have been water or beer or something. With a bit of tin and, you know, some wine and food. But yeah, that kept the population going. And there was a lot of German people come here because that was where we were selling our opal to.
Right.
And they came across. And then when the war started, those people were either sent away or, you know, just... So So the whole place declined over the years till the stage now we've got about 100 people in the town. Wow.
So you capture your own water. What does the town do for water?
We have a huge dam out to the north of here.
Right.
That was organised originally by an engineer that did the Broken Hill water supply and then went on through here to Sydney Harbour Bridge.
Okay.
And we've, touch wood, never run out since.
Never ran out of water?
Yeah. So we've got town water, we've got town electricity, but a lot of people here run on rainwater and solar power.
Solar power.
Yeah.
We have the first solar power station in the world here, which is pretty unique, used to run the town.
Yep.
It's now decommissioned, but we're going to get the whole thing going again for tourism.
Yes.
Right. Hmm. So the town of Wycliffe's population is 91. You just mentioned tourism. Do you get a lot of tourists at Wycliffe?
Look, in the heat, in the summertime, for possibly 4 months, you're lucky to see half a dozen people a week.
Uh-huh.
Come through here.
Yep.
But from sort of Easter onwards and school holidays, a lot of families bring their children here and they go fossicking out in the field and find some beautiful stuff too.
Okay.
So it's a real family place here because the kids can be kids. It's not like in the city they haven't even got a backyard. Out here we've got a huge backyard.
Yeah.
And one thing about being out here, unless you're definitely on full Telstra, you've got no phone, no internet, you've got nothing. It's like you're in the third world.
Oh, we just use smoke signals.
Yeah. Smoke signals?
Yeah.
And war drums?
Yeah.
And war drums. All right, look, we're going to have to wind this up, Lindsay Cree. Thank you so much for inviting us into this beautiful home.
Yeah.
We haven't yet seen the underground section. We can't wait to see that. We're just going to wind this up. Now, we're going to play your favourite song. Now, you've left this up to us because you've got so many, you couldn't choose one. So I'm thinking, Lynn, what do you think about Men at Work's Down Under?
Well, I think that sounds quite appropriate, seeing the house is under.
Under, down, under. Thank you so much for your time, Lindsay and Cree.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you. Cree's sitting there. She's a little bit shy, Cree, but that's fine. We'll be back with more Roaming Oz listeners straight after Men at Work's Land Down Under.
A freight had come in on a hippie trailhead full of zombies. I met a strange lady, she made me nervous. She took me in and gave me breakfast. And she said, do you come from a land down under? A women glow and men blunder. Can't you hear that thunder? Buying bread from a man in Brussels. He was 6'4" and full of muscle. I said, do you speak my language? He just smiled and gave me a Vegemite sandwich. And he said, I come from a land down under, where leaders flow and men chunder. Can't you hear the thunder? You better run, you better take cover. Diamond, a denim.
This is Roman Oz, and my name is Phil C, and we are in St. George at the Unique Egg. And I'm chatting with Stavros, the owner of the Unique Egg. How are you today, Stavros?
Well, I'm a little bit dizzy.
A little bit dizzy?
And I put it down to a cloudy dust, a day.
Cloudy day. Cloudy days make you dizzy.
Fair enough. But I had a hell of a night's kangaroo shooting.
Yes.
And always have a sleep at daytime.
Okay.
And every Tom, Dick and Harry wants anything, I could never say no.
Okay.
If I was a Sheila, I would have been always pregnant.
So how long have you been in Australia, Stavros? You're originally born in Greece. How long have
Since
you been here?
Since January 1954.
1954.
My
okay.
uncle had the old Greek cafe here.
Right.
I come here for 2 or 3 years, and I'm still here.
Okay. So, Stavros, tell us a little bit about the eggs. How did you get into carving them, and why? What was the reason for it?
Well, when our village got burned and all this, we used to have sheep, goats, donkeys, mm-hmm. and we went bush, live in caves.
Okay.
And we used to, you know, milk and everything.
Yes.
You go on. And shearers and drovers used to do woodwork carving. There's a little walking stick up there.
Yes.
In there.
Yeah.
And us kids, we had no knives to carve. We used to break a bottle and do woodwork carving.
Okay.
Perfect. And when I come here, found my first egg, I break a bottle with the glass and I carve my first egg.
Okay.
And out in the bush when we sit in white and shooting, peg the skins out and all this. The emus having coming around and all this. If you just move slowly, they come from here to there. You give them something to eat, they never leave you.
Okay.
The female bird lays the egg, and the male one sits on them between 52 up to 56 days. No food, no water. It can last till the eggs are hatched out. You look after the young ones till they grow up too.
Right.
Nature put 2 to 3 kilos of oil there.
Okay.
Not fat like that.
Not fat in the tummy. So they put the oil in the back, and that's what keeps the bird alive to survive for the time.
That's right.
Okay. So how long does it take to carve an egg?
30, 40 hours.
30 or 40 hours?
Up to 50, some of them.
Okay. Depending on the thickness of the egg or what it is you're trying to get from the egg, what makes one egg 50 and another 30?
It is what you carve on.
Okay.
Like everyone, some of them, you go... Now, when you carve the egg, you throw away material and you find the colours. If you happen to go a little bit too far, you're not supposed to, no reverse gear,
no.
You spoil it. And that makes you think.
Now, you said that each egg is unique and each you can get many different colours from the eggs.
Mm.
And is that because of the depth that you have to carve or...?
Yeah, the different depths.
Okay.
Now, when... The female bird lays the egg, the male one sits there. Why she goes, she play around with other birds,
yes.
Come back and keep lying. So the eggs are same mother, different fathers.
Ah. So from a different father or different male emu, that will produce a different colour? Or?
Well, older bird lays darker colour eggs, bigger and so, yeah.
Okay, okay. Now, I understand that you're... daughter, Panoraya, if I've said that correctly, she now is carving eggs. You've
when
taught her the art of carving the eggs?
I didn't taught her. She
you
was
didn't?
Here blown to just look it and she done it.
Oh, really?
That's it.
So she just, you didn't have to teach her anything?
She
no, just
she was watching what I was doing.
Okay. So when you go to fly with the angels, Panoraya should be taking over and continuing the tradition of the unique eggs.
Yes, and Panoraya, the name Panoraya is my grandmother's name in
okay.
Greece.
Okay.
And it means above beautiful.
Okay. So what about Haley?
Now, Haley's just wandering over here. She's showing us the family photographs. Haley, what is it that you actually do in the shop?
I'm just customer service.
Okay, customer service.
And I give a little spiel about the eggs to the people, yeah.
Okay, so is there anything you can tell us about the eggs as looking at it from a customer's point of view or a person coming in to visit? Because it is actually a gallery, isn't it?
It surely is a gallery, yes.
And the eggs aren't really for sale, and it's a $5 entry for the gallery. So I guess you take the people through the gallery?
Yes, so I greet people, give them a little spiel, tell them just to give them a little bit of an idea of what they're looking at, mm-hmm. and then they go through and you can take photos and everything else.
Okay, fabulous. So what can you tell the listeners, what can they expect to see when they come to the Unique Egg?
Well, when you come to see the Unique Egg, you can expect to see a gallery of over 250 carved and illuminated emu eggs.
Okay.
And they're all mostly carved by Stavros. There is, I think it's like 12 out there that are Panarayas.
Yes.
So basically my spiel is just telling you, explaining that each one's unique to its own colour, texture and size, as Stavros was just saying before.
Yes.
And then within each shell you can get 8 to 10 layers of natural colours.
Okay.
And then I just show you his first original egg, which is this one here.
Right.
That he did back in 1954.
Okay.
He also did that one with, he broke a glass bottle and used a bit of glass to carve that one.
To carve that one, yeah.
And this one here is what gave him the idea for the light.
For the light?
He put a candle behind there, saw that the light brought the colour out, and that's when he began illuminating them.
Okay. Yeah. Okay, fabulous. And he's also got a book here, Stavros, A Unique Man, the only self-taught artist of his kind in the world. Now, what can we expect to see if somebody bought that book, for example?
Well, within that book, it's basically his biography.
Okay.
Gives you a little bit of history back in Greece. Shows, when I read it, I knew he was cheeky. But it wasn't until I read the book that I found out how cheeky he was.
How cheeky he is.
Yeah.
He's looking a little cheeky over there, isn't he?
He is. You never know what to expect.
You never know what's going through his mind.
No, definitely not.
Fabulous. All right, well, I'll go back to Stavros now. Stavros, we're going to have to wind this up in a moment, my friend. It's been a pleasure talking with you and learning so much about your fabulous craft. And it's great that you've got Panaraya to continue on with the business of carving eggs. And I want to thank you so much for taking the time to chat with us.
Same to you from us.
Okay, fabulous. All right, now we're back to you, Hayley. I've got to play an Australian song, okay? We always play Australian music after each chat, each interview. Do you have a favourite song we might be able to play for you?
Old Man Emu by
Johnny Williamson. Yes. All right, fabulous choice, and I can understand why you selected Hayley. We're at the Unique Egg, listeners. This is Phil C, Raymond Oz, and we'll be back with more of this straight after Johnny Williamson's Old Man Emu.
There he goes. Let me tell you of an interview with an old man emu. He's got a beak and feathers and things, but the poor old fella ain't got no wings. Aren't you jealous of the wedge-tailed eagle? Ba-da-da-da-da-da. While the eagle's flying around and around, keeping 2 feet firmly on the ground. Now I can't fly, but I'm telling you. He can't fly, but I'm telling you. Reckon on the pants of a kangaroo. Like alarum, better by far than a white cockatoo or a budgerigar. They squeak and squawk and try and talk. Why, me and them's like teeth and talk. But I don't know. Here I'm live and I'm telling you, we can run the path of a kangaroo. Well, a dingo came around one day. Hey there, Emu, wanna play? But the emu was too smart for him. Walked right up and kicked him in the shin. He got live and I'm telling you, we can run the pants of a kangaroo. Well, the last time I saw old man emu, he was chasing a female he knew. As he shot past, I heard him say, she can't fly, but I'm telling you. She can't fly, but I'm telling you. She can run the fair till I can go. Well, there is a moral to this ditty. Thrush can sing, but he ain't pretty. Duck can swim, but he can't sing. Nor can eagle on the wing. If you can't fly, but I'm telling you, he can run the pants of a kangaroo. Well, I pulled the barrel up and he said, it's true.
There you go, listeners. That is Johnny Williamson with his classic Old Man Emu. And this is another Johnny Williamson classic. It's a song called, and it gets requested heaps, Old Farts in Caravan Parks.
Oh, happy travellers are we, around Australia in a caravan. The kids are gone, we have no plan. You navigate, I'm your engine man. Yes, happy campers are we. And king of the road are we. Up a mountain road we wind, with a mile of traffic stuck behind. Too friendly a folk you wouldn't find. Oh, cheery old chooks away. We've hit the road and sold a home. Like a pair of drovers round we roam. No more winter and no more foam. We're wild and fancy free. And a pair of toilers are we. We'll pick fruit or prune a tree. Any old job doesn't worry me. It'll cover our fuel and the camping fee. Ah, frugal old farts, oi. And the dear old chook of you, in your terry toweling dressing gown, the one you bought in the country town, yours is pink and mine is brown. Threadbare old farts, oi. Yet we've hit the road and sold a home. Like a pair of drovers round we roam. No more winter and no more foam. We're wild and fancy free. Oh, geez, we'll have to pull up again soon, don't we? And a tidy little unit are we. Everything has a place to be. A jar of coffee and a tin of tea. A life or two, but not for three. Oh, sexy old tarts away. And we always camp just near the loo, cause I have to go at midnight too. And dribble, 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 dribble's all I do. All over the hill are we. Oh, happy campers are we. Around Australia in a caravan. The kids are gone, we have no plan. You navigate, I'm your engine man. Yes, happy campers are we. Go around. And the same to you too, sonny.
Hey listeners, my name is Phil C, and if you've just joined the program, this is Roman Oz, and I am in southwest Queensland at the Nindingully Pub with Jamie. How are you going, Jamie?
I'm good, mate. Yourself?
Fabulous stuff, my man. I've got to tell you, thanks, first of all, for taking the time to talk with me.
Pleasure.
I know you're busy. I know you've got a lot on your plate. We've just arrived, and it's late in the afternoon, and you've said you've got a huge crowd of people coming in, and you're actually... Are you the chef here? Or?
I am a chef, yes.
You're a trained chef?
Yeah,
you're
that's qualified that's chef. Yeah. Yep.
Okay. So... how many sort of people do you get through on an average night? Let's talk about
food. Average night sort of can go from sort of 20 all the way up to about 60, 80, 100 people.
Oh,
you never really pick it here.
Okay, all right. So, and I guess the reason for that is this pub, it's the oldest pub in Queensland,
That's right.
Is that correct?
Continuously licensed, yep. Still in its original position.
Okay, and it came out in 1864, so, and it's in its original position?
Original position.
Have you made any changes? Because a lot of it looks pretty original.
Yeah, most of it's original. We got the veranda all redone a couple of years back, because that was starting to get a bit wobbly, I guess. So,
okay.
Everything else is pretty much original, yeah.
Fabulous stuff. Well, I've got to tell you, it looks fantastic. And you got a huge area outside. You got this big outside area, which is great for kids and pet friendly.
Pet friendly, yep, in the beer garden.
Pet friendly in the beer garden. Yeah, no, we can't have them in the restaurant. We can't have them in the pub, but I understand. But pet friendly in the beer garden, that's great, because a lot of the nomads travel with pets now.
They do.
I mean, I got a pet myself, and I'm parked up next to a guy who's got a dog. So you get a lot. You get a lot of nomads travelling with their pets. Now, another thing is, you guys are famous for a road train burger.
Yeah, it's a big road train burger.
Tell us about this road train burger, because I understand, like, there's no one man's been able to eat it by himself, has it?
Not yet. It's 5.5 kilos of burger, so it's a bit of a big size burger, yes.
Okay.
We've had it out for probably 10 years now. It's quite popular. Usually 4 to 6 people would eat it. So,
okay.
Yeah.
And was that your creation, Jamie?
I created it. The old man came up with the idea.
Okay.
Yeah. Put it together.
The old man came up with the idea. You put it together. 5.5 kilos, and no man has ever been able to eat it single-handed. Have you had a few tries?
We've had plenty of tries, yes.
Plenty of tries.
We had one fellow come close not long ago.
Okay.
And when we first originally bought the burger out, one fellow pretty much ate all of it, bar a bit of bread. It was a bit smaller back then too.
Okay, so you pumped it up a bit.
Yeah.
So what happens if somebody is able to do it? What do they get? Like nobody's been able to do it.
No way. Originally, we had a 5-liter keg for a winner, but I don't think they make those anymore. So we don't really. We just sort of have the burger for free and just do up a little souvenir package if they can get through it. Yeah.
Okay.
We've never had to do that yet.
So. Goodness gracious me! I've heard about this burger. I said to my other half on the way down here, you know what, I might have a crack at this burger. And she said, no, you don't, because if you don't get to eat it all, I'm going to end up paying
breakfast,
for
breakfast,
it.
Lunch, dinner.
All right, so you got some free camping, which is a great thing. And you also have showers and toilets.
Yes.
And it's all free.
All free. It's a gold coin donation. That all goes to RFDS, the Flying Doctors.
Okay.
Yeah.
How long have you been running the free camping and with the showers and toilets and everything?
For 20 years at least.
20 years.
Yeah, free camping's always been around. Showers sort of put back in about, say, we've always had at least 2 showers out there 3 years ago. So,
And really just the gold coin donation.
That's it. All for charity.
Come in, buy a beer and have a crack at this road train burger.
That's it.
If you think you're brave enough. So what else can I ask you? Have you got any other form of accommodation other than the free stuff? You got any rooms here?
We've got five rooms. At the end of the pub here, that's all the oldest end of the pub as well. So we've got 3 double rooms and a couple rooms that have got single beds in them and stuff like that.
Right.
They're not got en suites, unfortunately.
Yep.
Because they all are, original old rooms. So,
original rooms, and you want to keep it original.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. We have got air conditioning in them there. So
Well, it gets pretty...
There's a bit of struggle through the summer.
Pretty darn hot. I was going to say that. It's pretty darn hot up here in Western Queensland. So you have put the ACs in there.
Yeah, we've got the ACs in there.
Fabulous. Now, I understand you also give away free beer yesterday.
All tomorrow.
All tomorrow.
Yeah. That's it. Never comes.
Because when I walked in, I was inquiring about the food menu, and old mate at the bar said, "We also have free beer tomorrow." And I went, "No, you don't mean yesterday?" And he went, "Yeah, you're right, you got me." And I said, "Well, you're lucky, because I'm not going to be here tomorrow." So free beer yesterday. Who came up with that?
That slogan's
concept.
Been around for a very while, though. Eh? Long while.
It's a long while.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, look, it's a funny thing. Now you're also on the banks of the Moonee River, and apparently your Moonee River's now in flood.
It is. Yeah.
So do you get a lot of rain here? How does it work? We're supposed to be in sunny Queensland. Yeah. What's the go, Jamie?
It's usually pretty dry this time of year, anyway. There's not usually that much rain around, but yeah, we've had a bit of a downpour last week, and that's caused a bit of the rise in the river.
Okay.
Yeah.
Fabulous. But you still got, I've got to say, you still got a lot of campers out there in your freaking, so they're not deterred.
No, they're hanging out.
They're still pushing through.
It is a nice spot. Just watch the water flow by.
So apart from this fabulous road train burger, 5.5 kilograms, nobody's been able to eat it. It feeds about 6. What else can people expect to get on your menu?
We've got plenty of variety of steaks. We've got pork belly. We've got Northern Territory barramundi.
Yes.
We try and get some sort of local seafood in from Sunshine Coast, like prawn, mullabar prawns and stuff like that.
Yep.
Specials vary from day to day.
Okay. And you're responsible for cooking it all, Jamie. Now, do you have somebody else here with you? Because this is a mighty big kitchen.
Yeah, we've got some chefs on deck.
Okay.
They've just joined the team just very recently, so getting ready for the season.
Okay. So what's the season for you guys?
Pretty much from Easter till end of October.
And it gets really busy here.
Yeah. Just the 4 months, yeah.
And now, apart from that, you've also got some merchandise. If anybody wants to take home a bit of memorabilia from the Nindy Gully pub, what sort of merch have you got out there for them to have a look at or buy?
Plenty of tees, stubby coolers, stickers, caps. Yes. During the wintertime, we've got hoodies in stock, beanies, yeah.
Good stuff. Well, I'm going to have a look at that straight after I grab myself something to eat. And I'm going to get a cold beer. Pity I wasn't here yesterday. That's the thing. And we're going to wrap this up, my friend. Now, Jamie, I've got to play an Aussie song, my friend. Now, what is your favourite Aussie band? Any genre. You're a nice-looking young fella. I can play you a Slim or a Chad Morgan song if you really want, but what's your music taste?
Oh, we'll go with the Angels, mate.
The Angels?
Yeah.
Mate, they're still rocking, you know. They are rocking like you wouldn't believe. Favourite Angels song? Am I ever going to see your face?
That's the one.
Am I ever going to see your face again? Well, I think I will, because you know what? You're going to be cooking me that train burger a bit later on, okay?
Good luck with that, mate.
Good on you, my mate. Thank you so much for taking the time to chat. Stick around, listeners. We're going to be back with more Roman Oz straight after Am I Ever Going to See Your Face Again? Well, there you go, listeners. Am I Ever Going to See Your Face Again? Written by Doc Neeson and the Brewster Brothers from the band The Angels. I'm going to wind this program up now by playing a couple of songs that you may not have heard for a while on the radio. They were big hits and beautiful songs by our very own Indigenous Aboriginal singer, Mr. Archie Roach. The first song I'm going to play for you is a number called Weeping in the Forest, and then I'm going to play you another one from the same album, and it's called So Young.
One, two, three.
Weeping in the Forest, folks.
Uncle Banjo told me before the children went away, life was good, life was free. Not like it is today. Children running everywhere, and the trees were looking after. Little spirits dancing there among the sweet, sweet laughter. Oh, but there's weeping in the forest. Now that the children have gone, and the trees at night get no rest, for they were there when the children were born.
Oh, there you go, listeners. That is Uncle Archie Roach himself. Passed away on the 30th of July, 2022. Australian singer, songwriter, and, of course, Aboriginal activist. I'm going to play you one more song by him before we wind up this program today of Roaming Oz. The number is called So Young.
You enjoyed the show, listeners.
If you missed any, check out our Facebook page, Spotify, or RomanOz.com.au.
Tune in next week for more
Roman Oz.